WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
Michael Wallace, President Trump says he had a good meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House. He says Ukraine and Russia should both declare victory and let history decide.
They should stop the war immediately. You go by the battle line, wherever it is, and both sides should go home, go to their families, stop the killing, and that should be it.
Trump says he and Zelensky discussed whether the U.S. should give Ukraine long-range Tomahawk missiles.
Hopefully we'll be able to get the war over with without thinking about Tomahawks.
Trump plans to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin in Budapest in a few weeks. Former New York Congressman George Santos was released from a New Jersey prison late last night after President Trump commuted the Republican sentence for fraud. CBS's Christian Benavides.
Santos served less than 3 months of a 7-year sentence. He'd been found guilty of 2 felony counts stemming from his 2022 campaign, wire fraud and identity theft. Santos will also no longer be required to pay nearly $400,000 in restitution to his victims.
Prince Andrew is giving up his royal titles after the newly released memoir of Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking victim, Virginia Giuffre, repeatedly mentioned the prince. CBS's MTS tie-up.
Andrew will remain a prince, but in practice, giving up his titles means he loses the Duke of York and other honors and will likely never again perform any public royal duties. His ex-wife, Sarah Ferguson, will also no longer be known as the Duchess of York, though their daughters, Princesses Beatrice and Eugenie, will keep their royal titles.
The Dodgers are headed to the World Series after a historic performance by Shohei Ohtani last night. He became the only pitcher to hit multiple home runs in a postseason game. He had 3 dingers in the 5-1 win over the Brewers.
The game was excellent. I loved it.
It was incredible. It was wild. It was loud. And Shohei, 3 bombs. Amazing.
The Dodgers swept Milwaukee in the National League Championship Series. Australia's government is about to ban social media for kids under 16.
Unfortunately, 7 out of 10 young Australians have seen things online that they shouldn't have.
That's Australia's communications manager, Annika Wells. The government is currently running a public education campaign with tips on how to begin weaning children off social media
for the good of their well-being. From December 10, people under the age of 16 will no longer have access to social media accounts.
The campaign offers checklists and conversation starters about ways to make the transition.
CBS's Michael Toscano. Facebook, YouTube, and others could be fined tens of millions of dollars if they don't block kids from getting accounts on their platforms. This is CBS News.
Eggland's Best, the only eggs with more fresh and delicious taste, plus superior nutrition. Eggland's Best, better taste, better nutrition, better egg.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, home for Matt and Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
For Civic Media News, I'm Charlie Pittman. Wednesday was White Cane Safety Day. The day's been around for 60 years and recognizes people who are blind or have visual impairments. It's also a reminder to motorists to stop 10 feet away from people carrying a white cane.
In Wisconsin, motorists are required to stop no shorter than 10 feet from a pedestrian who is in the roadway, who is carrying a white cane or using a service animal.
Denise Jess is executive director of the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. She herself is blind and carries a foldable white cane. She says reminding drivers to take extra caution benefits all people.
We don't want drivers running over pedestrians, period. But vulnerable pedestrians who really can't see you coming need that that extra protection under the law.
Wisconsin's white cane law comes with a fine. And even though it's not against the law, Jess says it's also not helpful to honk.
But honking is confusing because we don't know if you're honking at us. You know, we have no way of visually verifying, are you honking at us? Are you honking to give us information? Are you honking because you're irritated that you had to stop? There's no way to understand what that honk is. So while it's not statutory limited, it's just it's just confusing. We don't know how to interpret it.
Just says care and attention while on the road doesn't only benefit folks who are blind or low vision. It also benefits you as a driver.
It's so critical to our safety and your well-being. You know, if you were to hit one of us, it would change your life as well, and we wouldn't want that to happen.
October is also National Pedestrian Safety Month. For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. More news anytime at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, home for Matt and Air on Air weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, a mostly sunny day, highs in the upper 60s. Showers tonight, a low around 42, and sunshine for Sunday with a high near 57, a little on the breezy side. For Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 39. Monday, showers at a high around 61.
It's 48 at our studios.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, we will recap all the events from the weekend, including local No Kings rallies across Wisconsin. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the Civic Media Spotlight. To kick it off, we have the Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie talks with Sarah Harrison, who's running for State Senate District 5, and discusses her logistics and commitment to addressing economic pressures, reproductive rights, and environmental issues, all while emphasizing practical solutions over partisan politics. And on top of that, she's a champion Excel user.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back. If you're rejoining us, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 4:30. It is Wednesday, and so it is time for one of my favorite segments. We call it Broad Appeal. I bring on broads, and I mean that respectfully, reverentially. We bring on amazing female candidates, elected officials, political leaders, organizers, and activists from all across the state and beyond to talk about why they are stepping up in such a fraught time in our nation's political history. We've got a great doer, a great candidate with us for this next half hour. Her name is Sarah Harrison. She's running for the State Senate District 5. I'm going to have her describe what that covers geographically. It's an interesting cross section. Now, folks, just like my prior guests, and again, big thanks to Trevor Young, candidate for the 21st State Senate District. The 21st District and the 5th District, these are toss-up districts in 2026. Mm-hmm. These are the districts that Democrats have to pick up in the state Senate races in order to take back the state Senate. We're going to talk about that race, but welcome, Sarah. Thank you for spending some of your Wednesday afternoon with us.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. Glad to be here.
I want to start where I left off with Trevor, which was I was talking to him about his experience running Racine's transit system. And I constantly talk about on this program how important I think it is, having worked at various levels of government, to have elected officials that have actually run things, whether that's in the private or worked in other jobs other than other than only as an elected official, whether that's in the private sector or the public sector. And you are a business owner, and your business is a logistics operational specialist firm to help businesses manage that. And I love this. So folks, if you don't know what logistics is, Sarah's going to tell you what it is. And this is absolutely about getting things done, and particularly complicated things at that. Tell folks what logistics is.
Absolutely. 100%. Well, so I was in the corporate logistics world for about 20 years. I managed budgets up to $175 million. I ran a distribution center where we had over 200 people. Some of them had worked in the building longer than I had been on the planet at that point in time. So logistics is all about getting the right thing to the right place at the right time and making sure that it's the right fit for all the folks throughout the process. So something might be really great for the person in receiving, but it might be a real pain in the butt for someone in shipping. You want to make sure that it's going through the process with the least amount of friction possible. So you're trying to serve a lot of masters, which sounds an awful lot like politics. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what I think is really interesting about this is logistics management is about trying to optimize. It's you have a lot of constraints that have to be built in. You certainly, I would assume, were quite busy trying to figure out how to solve some of our supply chain problems coming during and through COVID. And I think that aptitude for complexity and trying to get things to run efficiently to serve both, you know, on the, as you said, as the on the receiving end or on the shipping end. I think that has a real direct application in government. But let me start with the basics, Sarah.
Yeah.
Why in the hell are you doing this? It is rough out there right now.
It is. It is indeed. It is rough out there. So I've been involved on the back end in volunteering and knocking doors and doing all that kind of stuff since I was 19 years old. So I've been around, knocking around the political universe for a while. Never wanted to run for office until my kids were at a school board meeting. We're in the Waukesha School District, so we're very internationally famous for our school board. And they were absolutely not heard. And I thought, you know what, if my kid at age 13 has the guts to stand in front of this room and they are absolutely not going to listen, then I want to make sure that we're putting the right people in those roles. And so I got involved with running for school board in a 60% conservative area. I came within 1% of being on that board. So very close. And then after that, Sarah Rodriguez asked me to run for her former assembly seat. And I said no. And then she asked me again. And I said no. And we played that game for a little while. And eventually I said yes. And so ever since then, I've been involved in the state legislative level. I ran for District 13 in 2022. And then when the maps changed, I ran for 15 in 2024.
Yeah, I also love if you tell me you're a reluctant candidate, you've probably won my vote immediately. Right? I mean,
right.
And I'm going to maybe put a generalization out there. When I know that a candidate is reluctant, when somebody says to me, you know, I don't know if I can do that, or that's not really me, or I'm concerned about it, I don't think I can win, that to me tells me that I don't have someone who frankly comes from an entitlement mindset. Or that presumes to know what everybody needs. And of course, that's me. And I say that as someone who used to be the one with my hand up in class all the time. But I never presumed to lead, right? So I deeply, deeply respect that. And one of the themes that I talk about, and it's virtually every week during this segment, Sarah, is when I'm talking to female candidates and elected officials, they all have a story that shares the parallel that you just shared with us and all of our listeners. And that is that you saw something in your life or in your community, in this case, your kids trying to be heard at a school board, and the right thing didn't happen. And that became the catalyst.
Yep.
And that's just such a powerful message. Sarah, what do you hope, again, you're gonna have a challenging race. It's kind of a toss-up district. We have your opponent is about as cookie cutter of a Republican as I could ever envision. What is your platform? What are the things, the issues that are closest to your heart that you want the voters of the 5th district to know about? What do you want to do differently?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, the important thing is what's close to their heart, right? So I'm out talking to folks in the community all the time. We do these walk and talks where we go for about a mile and we just chat about what's on your mind, what's going on in your neighborhood, whether it's in West Allis or if it's in Pewaukee or if it's in my little tiny segment of Milwaukee. Wherever we are, I want to know what's on their mind. And there's a couple of things that I keep hearing from the folks I'm talking to. And I'm going to preface this by saying I do not always agree with James Carbo, but he was right when he said, it's the economy, stupid. People are really feeling the economic pressure right now. And there's a couple layers to that. So from a personal finance perspective, folks are really feeling the pinch in terms of healthcare, childcare, housing, making sure that they can actually make their budget work and provide their basic needs. And then on another level, when we look at the activities happening in Madison, we have all these what we call unfunded mandates. So I'm going to tell a community they have to do a certain thing, but I'm not going to give them any money to do it.
And just to be clear, I want people to understand what this is, because it is a recurring problem in basically every single community in the state. It doesn't matter if you're a red or blue jurisdiction. When we say unfunded mandate, what we mean is that the state government has enacted some law that requires a local government to provide some service or take some action, but they provide no funding when they put that requirement in place, hence the term unfunded. They don't provide funding, but they demand, they tell you it's in law, you must do X, Y, and Z. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of these things across the state. It's why you've seen local governments in such a fiscal pinch. I'm so sorry to butt in there, but it's such an important thing, and it's happening all over, Sarah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my opponent, the incumbent in the seat, voted against the budget, and his reasoning was it didn't cut enough spending. I would have also voted against that budget because it didn't fully fund our public schools. It didn't continue to support our communities. So it's kind of funny because we both would have been opposed, but for totally different reasons. So that's one, economy. Another thing that people are still worried about, and it's not quite as intense as it was in previous years, but reproductive freedom, getting that put into our law clearly, permanently, without loopholes, really defining that. And the other thing, especially with the younger folks that I hear a lot of concern about, is environmental issues. So we're talking green energy, we're talking renewable resources, and there's also a healthcare aspect to that. And my youngest just did a project this year about sustainable agriculture, and it's amazing. There's all sorts of ways that we can make it work. We just have to all have a plan and stick to it. So those are the big three.
Yeah, when I think about natural resources and resource stewardship, right, I tend to sort of try to get away from like climate because people lose their minds. But everybody in Wisconsin, like everybody spends time outside. We know that tourism is a huge part of our state's economy, and agriculture and manufacturing. So I talk about it in terms of like resource management, resource stewardship. And to me, this is, and what I hear in your answer in part, Sarah, about these environmental issues, is that it is kind of an all of the above approach. We're not going to get away from fossil fuels immediately. That's not what works. It's unreasonable. There's AI data centers. There's so much happening. But looking critically at the impacts, deciding how we take an all of the above approach and not sticking our heads in the ground like the Trump administration has done by basically telling EPA scientists you can't do science. No more sciencing in the EPA anymore, people.
Right.
I mean, it's bananas.
Yeah. Well, and you don't have to be an EPA scientist to know that if you don't farm and use sustainable agriculture, you're going to have runoff of that really rich topsoil. Like you can see that without having a PhD or being a climate scientist.
Absolutely. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're joined this half hour for this Wednesday's installment of Broad Appeal by Sarah Harrison. She is the candidate for state Senate in 2026 in District 5. Tell us what are the geographic bounds of District 5? It's a big old district.
It is. It is indeed. So we have all of Pewaukee, all of Brookfield, all of Elm Grove, a little tiny slice of Waukesha, most of Wauwatosa, most of West Allis, and then a little tiny slice of Milwaukee. So it's kind of like a little patchwork. We got a little quilt going on there. And I have run, like I said, twice in the western side of the district, in District 15 for the Assembly. And that is where we have a lot of opportunity because Waukesha County was one of four counties to move further blue last fall. So we really have to be out there talking to the people, getting them to the polls. And there's a real opportunity to do that here.
I am so excited for this race in particular, Sarah. I hope you're on our airwaves on this program frequently as we move into 2026 because it is highly winnable. And I think it is an incredible microcosm for the entire state, right? Maybe as goes District 5, so goes Wisconsin. We're going to keep this great discussion going. We're going to talk about Sarah, the mom, as well as the candidate and business owner when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The conservative majority of the U.S. Supreme Court appeared to agree October 15th with arguments that the Voting Rights Act Section 2's majority-minority voting districts conflicted with the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. A decision is expected next year. Chief Justice John Roberts signaled that the court's 2023 Milligan precedent, a very similar case, may not apply to Louisiana versus Calais. Justice Kagan later pointed out that the court rejected several similar arguments by the state of Alabama defending its discrimination. Louisiana argued that the court-mandated majority-minority districts giving minority voters an equal chance to elect the candidate of their choice puts the state in a position to discriminate against other voters. Justices Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett both voiced support for an endpoint to sunset such opportunity districts. The court's Jingles test, used to determine if a group qualifies for such a district, was also questioned by the conservative justices. In her opening argument, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund's Janae Nelson said that should the court strike down Section 2, it would be, quote, a staggering reversal of precedent that would throw maps across the country into chaos. There are 148 VRA majority-minority districts in 28 states, according to Ballotpedia. We've linked a transcript of the arguments at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org, a message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Our next segment's going to be Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Pete is joined by Travel Wisconsin's Logan Rogue for some trivia fun and talks about what's going on around our great state this fall. Tune in.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, as we wind down this Tuesday night show here on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. I am Pete Schwabba, Conrad Krieger working the board. I just want to reiterate, folks, that those of you, we talked about this earlier in the show, if you text in, a lot of people listen to the rebroadcast from 4 to 6 a.m. if they're out on the road or whatever. That does not qualify you for the text to win contest, unfortunately. So you got to find a way, if you can, to text us between 7 and 8, and that will make sure you qualify for the daily prizes and the grand prize as well. And there you go. So we have a couple more minutes here with our current guest, Mr. Logan Rogge. He is the Senior Communications Specialist for Travel Wisconsin. He just gave me a quiz again. I think I did better on the quiz this time, Logan. I think I only got 1 out of 5 last time.
Yeah, I was impressed, Pete. I think you've been studying up.
And had I followed my instincts, it might have been 3.5 out of 5. So I feel like every time you're here, I'm going to make slow incremental progress. Logan Rogge from Travel Wisconsin. Let's finish up. Hey, first of all, I want to ask you, I don't see a lot of Marinette, Wisconsin on the Travel Wisconsin website. What can I do? How can I go to bat for the town in which I live?
Well, Marinette County, fantastic destination.
Yes.
I think you just got to search a little harder, Pete, because we love Marinette. You know, you're going to find information on the Marinette Waterfall Tours, maybe you're rafting at Koshir's I'm blanking on the name of the river, but
Menominee.
There's certainly plenty of ways to,
yeah,
or Peshtigo. Yep. Yep. Certainly plenty of ways to plan a trip to Marinette with the help of travelwisconsin.com. But, you know, I know they have some great local resources available to folks too.
They do. And it's a great, especially in fall, the colors up there in Marinette County are beautiful, as they are in Oconee County as well in Northeast Wisconsin. But I have to say, I'm just kind of giving you a hard time because I am the world's most notorious inside guy anyway. But I love the fall colors out my picture windows.
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to all the inside tips the first time I get up to Marinette, Pete.
I'll give you the inside guy tour of fall. Yeah. I think it could be really cool. All right. So before we let you go, Logan, let's talk about this Nightlights thing. Looks really cool. Tell us about Nightlights.
So, yeah, I thought this was appropriate topic for a show like yours. You know, fall days get darker earlier. Those temperatures are cooler and you're going to find these really cool nighttime artful like light shows throughout the state. So there's a few I'd like to highlight. One's in Oshkosh. It's at the Payne Art Center and Gardens, and it's called The Nature of Light. Have you heard of this yet?
No, I have not.
So they put on their first display back in 2022, and it attracted more than 50,000 visitors to this historic estate in Oshkosh. Wow. And they're returning this year with the second incarnation of The Nature of Light. It opened to the public in August, and it runs each night through October 26th. And it's these spectacular showcases of illuminated sculptures and environments inside and outside the Payne. They have light dancers that are putting on circus style performances to enhance the viewing experience. Definitely one to check out.
That's fantastic.
Another quick one in Madison, that's Gleam. It's an annual exhibition at the Ulbrich Botanical Gardens. It's been wowing people for a decade. These large-scale light installations that are created by local, regional, and international designers. So you can stroll the outdoor 16-acre garden and inside the conservancy to see this destination literally in a new light. Book the ticket soon, though. Gleam runs Wednesdays through Saturdays until October 25th.
I have not heard of that one. That's kind of cool. Real quick, we've got about a minute left, Logan. What about Fall Farm Fun?
Yeah, there's plenty of options to choose from. If you're in the Lincoln County area, I'd highly suggest checking out Helene's Hilltop Orchard. That's in Merrill. They got a big U-Pick apple operation there. Oh. They have, you know, a bakery. You know, you can get pastries, bread, their signature pies. Another great idea is folks in southern Wisconsin, they'll want to travel to Janesville for Skelly's Farm Market. Particularly for their corn maze, they have a escape room style corn maze that
love it.
Integrates clues and like solving puzzles to navigate your way through the maze, where you'll actually end by unlocking a door and solving this mystery. So those are two great destinations to check out this fall.
The great thing about a corn maze is if you never get out, you won't starve to death because you've got food.
Some people maybe like a little more variety in their diet, but I get the logic. Yeah.
Just I'm saying for legal purposes, it helps.
Yeah.
Hey, this is all great stuff. You must love your gig, buddy. So much fun talking about the great things and the beauty in our state, and you do it really well. Thank you, as always, for your time.
It was a pleasure to be on, Pete. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you soon. Thanks. That's Logan Rogge. Check out Travel Wisconsin, the website. There's tons more information about really cool stuff happening in our state all over the next what is fall? 3 months, Conrad?
Yeah. About right? And then it's the, you know.
Whew, and it's brutal. Yeah. You know, when I become the biggest football fan is when there's snow on the ground. I just don't want to go outside.
I mean, yeah, because it's right there in front of you and you're like, all right.
That's when I get serious about my sports fandom. I'd like to thank Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Logan Rogge and you for all of your texts and calls. It's been great fun here. Good luck with the contest, everybody. Tomorrow night, who do we have, Conrad? We've got...
Well, we got Rich LoCascio.
Oh, we got the wrestling.
Their wrestling announcer.
Wrestling announcer Rich LoCascio.
Record producer and filmmaker Wendy Schneider and Civic Media's own David Grant telling us how you can take over the radio for a day. It's going to be a fun show. Be sure and be back here. Happy birthday once again to Bruce Springsteen. On behalf of the lovable producer Conrad, I'm Pete Schwabba saying good night, Wisconsin.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for matinee on air.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
CBS News Brief. During his meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House, President Trump expressed reservations about sending Ukraine long-range Tomahawk missiles.
Hopefully we'll be able to get the war over with without thinking about Tomahawks.
Trump says it's time for Ukraine and Russia to stop the killing and make a deal. Former New York Congressman George Santos walked out of a New Jersey prison late last night after President Trump commuted his sentence for fraud. CBS's Christian Benavides.
Santos will no longer be required to pay nearly $400,000 in restitution to his victims.
Santos served 3 months of a 7-year sentence. Shohei Ohtani hit 3 home runs and pitched 6 scoreless innings as the Dodgers beat the Brewers 5-1 to sweep the National League Championship Series.
It was incredible. It was wild. It was loud. And Shohei, 3 bombs. Amazing.
Ohtani is the only pitcher in Major League history to hit multiple home runs in a playoff game. He struck out 10 batters. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.
A season-ending loss. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers lost to the Dodgers in L.A. 5-1. The Dodgers completing a 4-game sweep of the National League Championship Series. An incredible performance by Shohei Ohtani, who was the Dodgers' starting pitcher. Ohtani with 3 home runs, including one that literally went out of the park. Bottom of the fourth, Brian Anderson with the call on TBS. The ball traveled 469 feet over the stands in right center field. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
We were part of an iconic, maybe the best individual performance ever in a postseason game.
With Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. K-pop Demon Hunters is a phenomenon kids can't seem to get enough of, and their parents can't seem to get the original soundtrack out of their heads. Buckle up, folks, or buy some earplugs, because the film is returning to the big screen for some Halloween sing-alongs. The Netflix animated fantasy adventure tells the story of a K-pop girl band that protects people from demons with song. Netflix is behind the theatrical release and is encouraging moviegoers to wear costumes. Pop Culture Jeopardy has been renewed for a season 2. In a related story, there's a show called Pop Culture Jeopardy, and it's already been on for a whole season. The show will be moving from Amazon Prime to Netflix and has the same answer with a question format as the actual Jeopardy. Host Colin Jost is currently in talks to return to the show, which should be back in 2026. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Tap. Eau Claire's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, a mostly sunny day, highs in the upper 60s. Showers tonight, a low around 42, and sunshine for Sunday with a high near 57, a little on the breezy side. For Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 39, Monday showers and a high around 61.
Right now, it's 44.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Conrad has restless leg syndrome, where it's hard to control your leg, and you got to be careful. There's a lot of expensive stuff around this studio. So, what broke over there just now?
A couple speakers.
They just redid the studio. We'll be dealing with.
sorry.
This is a serious thing. All right, what are we going to do here?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Amy Gaither, director of a new show at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Then Eric and Adam from Ask Your Mother drop by to rock the studio. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Next up is Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Pat talks with Jill Underley, Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction, who talks about the annual State of Education remark she recently delivered at the state capitol. Underley explains how, under the Trump administration, the federal government has become the biggest bully in our classrooms.
Welcome back. A reminder that our Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest is going on this hour. And the key word for this hour is morning, M-O-R-N-I-N-G, like the morning part of the day. Text morning using the Civic Media app before 8 a.m. and you will be in the running for a daily prize, which is $200 and a gold-plated chain, see green and gold. And also in the running, every entry is in the running for the grand prize, which includes tickets to a Green Bay versus Minnesota game in Green Bay, playing a little football in the month of November, and a gas card to get you there. Again, details at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. But morning is the keyword to text before 8 o'clock, and then your next chance to win, and there are 7 chances every day, your next chance to win the 9 a.m. hour on Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air. Time for our weekly homeroom segment where we talk about public education, opportunities, and threats. And the threats are out there, but there are people who are willing to lead and call them out. And one of those folks is the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley, who joins us this morning in the wake of her annual State of Education address delivered last week. Well, Jill Underley, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning to you too, Pat. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. It's so nice to have you here today. I mean, you've seen the headlines in the coverage of your remarks, and so we're going to start there. I mean, there are definitely issues that are internal to education in Wisconsin, but there's some real external pressure, and it's reflected in headlines that had you taking note that the biggest schoolyard bully that Wisconsin schools face right now is our own federal government, is the Trump administration. It's a, you know, it's a very assertive thing to say. Tell folks why that was a central part of your remarks.
Yeah, well, so the overall message from the State of Education address is that Wisconsin public education is a living story. It's written daily by students, educators, and communities. The themes in the State of Education were about belonging, love, community, pride in our communities. And what we're seeing right now is that the federal government is really trying to destroy that, right? They're taking away funding for teachers. They're taking away funding for special education students. The one that was in the headlines was students who are deafblind. They've threatened funding for school nutrition, programs in our schools. And so it's just really, they are the ones that are really causing a lot of chaos, I think, and uncertainty in our schools. Schools are wondering, are they going to get this money? And at the Department of Public Instruction, we're left to navigate that and stand up, you know, for our school districts, which is what we'll do anyway. But the federal government is really inserting themselves into the everyday operations of our schools and really threatening the good work that our schools are doing.
Especially for a group that says that all the time that they're looking to give education back to the states, they seem to find ways to continue to micromanage or to interfere. And you touched on one of them that really got my attention yesterday, as Up North News reporter Selena Heller was working on this story about how under Trump, the U.S. Department of Education is canceling funding that would go toward the Wisconsin Deafblind Technical Assistance Program. And Why is it being endangered like this? Because it falls under Donald Trump's definition of DEI, that you're singling out a group for help. In this case, children who are deaf and blind. Talk more about the program and its value, as well as the assertion that there's something divisive apparently about this.
Well, that's just it. It's just so arbitrary. I think, you know, when they were going through these programs, they were just doing a find and search, you know, in the grants for anything that mentioned diversity or inclusion or equity. And the deaf-blind community, I mean, it's a very specific population, very vulnerable population. Very specialized when it comes to instruction. And when you look at special needs or you look at the deafblind community, you know, as an example, I mean, what we do in public education is we try to ensure that every human has an opportunity to be included and belong in their communities. And so we provide specialized training. We provide, you know, this grant money provides specialized instruction, but also training for the teachers, materials, I mean, Braille. You know, so it's really just disheartening, and rather it's just cruel, to be honest, that they're just kind of that they're doing this to our communities. I mean, they're just ripping things apart that we have spent time building and investing in over the years.
Well, we've had politicians doing that at the state level for some time as well. We're talking to Jill Underley, Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction, and you focused on that, about pulling resources away from our public schools in order to fund the, you know, the private voucher scheme that's going on and is taking up, you know, it's getting mighty close to a $1 billion price tag that I still think plenty of taxpayers around Wisconsin don't know about. What they know is that there are these referendums. All the time, these referendums, and you have some politicians that are painting the school districts as being greedy and having to raise taxes. And it feels like you're the one connecting the dots, saying there's a reason for these referendums, and it's not any kind of selfishness on the part of your local school board.
Yeah, I think people are starting to put it together. I mean, because the money is, you know, the money that the legislature puts in every year, you know, it is pie. I mean, if you want to think about it that way, it's just that the piece of the pie that goes to privatization just keeps getting larger. So therefore, even though the money might appear that, you know, the legislature is putting more money in every year, it's just that the portion that goes to our public school districts is getting smaller. And I do feel people are putting it together. I'm seeing a lot of signs of hope, you know, like, for example, like in the Green Bay area, they were able to put it on their tax bills, you know, how much money was going to private schools from their tax, from their property tax. So, I mean, I know people want this information on there. And my hope is that, you know, in the next few years, if the legislature is able to, you know, get more gains with more public school advocates in the legislature, that this will be on everybody's tax bill. It's just transparency is so important in government. And I do see some signs of hope there.
As we talk about moving from the, you know, the 30,000 foot level of federal funds and state funds into the classroom itself, current practices, technology, teaching methods, everything else, when you look at that part of the state of education in Wisconsin, are there things there that need particular investment, that need more of a focus than they've been getting these days, that where Wisconsin kids might risk falling behind if we're not funding, you know, something to its proper level, or not keeping our teachers trained or anything like that? Where are those opportunities?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. So as you're probably aware, but maybe your listeners are not, we did undergo a strategic planning process over the past couple of years, and we listened to people throughout Wisconsin about what they want in their public schools. And so we came up with four different pillars, and the one that I'll talk about right now, I mean, is the innovative education. We really need to start preparing kids for their future and not our past. I mean, when you think about how school is done, in many ways, it's still done the same way as it was 50 to 100 years ago. And so we really need to start looking at innovation. We need to look at how we're able to meet students where they are and where they're going to go. I mean, technology is moving so fast right now. And we need to expand, you know, personalized learning and competency-based learning in our schools. We need to use career pathways to our advantage. We need to improve access to learning opportunities and library resources. And our goal is to prepare kids for their future. We're also looking at educator recruitment and retention. We know that the number one indicator of a child's success in school when they're in the school is the quality of their teacher. And when we have, you know, this turnover with our teachers, when we are struggling to fill high need areas like math and science and global languages and special education, that's hurting kids. And that's hurting our future, you know, not just our economy, but I mean, just these humans, you know, their future. So we have to really look at and agree that strong schools need strong educators. And we know that we need to expand access to grow your own programs. We need to improve teacher compensation, mentorship, professional development. But going back to the federal aspect, this is an area that they are really leaning in on cutting funding for, is our educator workforce.
It also sounds like people in the legislature, certain folks have wanted to stress standardized tests and the method of scoring and tracking that. There's been some back and forth in the legislature about that. How would you describe the current standardization test and grading process? Are there still changes that need to be made compared to where we are right now?
Yeah, I think that was the interesting criticism, I think, about my state of education, is just that the speech was about, you know, belonging and community pride and the things that we need to do to make our schools stronger. And the opposition or the people who criticize it really are like, well, you know, she's just lowering standards. The thing is, it's like the test is just a one point in time. And it's always undergoing review. When you look at our standards are updated every 7 years, and it's not the same ones every year. So it's like, you know, math is done 1 year, literacy is another year, science is another year. And so it's like the test is constantly undergoing changes. And so you do have to update the metrics. And so it's, you know, that's one piece of it. But then the other piece of it is our school report card, our school and district report cards, which were put into place 15 years ago, and they're in state statute as far as what, you know, is measured. And so we did look at that for the first time in 15 years, and just to make sure that things are on track. It's kind of like when your computer undergoes an update, it always seems like, oh, it's at the worst time, or your phone has to download an update. But that's what we did with the state and district report cards. It's like it was due to get an update and just make sure everything was aligned. But again, it's just one piece of information. We've got lots of other indicators, of the health, I suppose, of our public schools.
And finally, you were recently elected to a second four-year term. There's going to be a change in the governor's office one way or another, a brand new governor. We won't know the makeup of the legislature, but with you being freshly elected, you're certainly positioned to be the most, fearless advocate is the right way. You've got the job security, essentially. How do you see your role over the next 4 years, the public-facing part of your role?
Look, I have never shied away from saying what I need to say or what needs to be said when it comes to public schools. I mean, that's always been my, just one of my characteristics, right? And so what I'm going to continue to do is just continue to advocate for public schools. I'm going to continue to advocate for the things that I know work. When we look at child development and we look at success academically, I mean, I talked about, you know, teachers and them being the number one indicator for academic success, but there's a lot more that goes into it. You know, school nutrition, making sure kids have access to mental health, but also health, medical health as well, and dental health too. And we also need to just continue to modernize our public education system. So I'm going to continue to speak out in favor of all of those.
Dr. Jill Underly, we've run out of time, but it was so nice to hear all about the state of education. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Pat.
All right. Much more in the 8 o'clock hour ahead of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network.
More Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. As Wisconsin has a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Did the average S&P 500 CEOs earn in less than 2 days what their typical worker earned in all of 2023? Yes. In 2023, the average S&P 500 CEO earned about $17 million, or about $46,849 per day, compared to under $64,000 per year for the average worker. Median figures were similar. CEOs made $16.3 million while median workers earned about $81,000, equivalent to less than 2 days of CEO pay. High CEO compensation remains a stark contrast to the modest worker earnings across major U.S. companies. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the recombobulation area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the recombobulation area.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
At the end of the first hour of the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy discuss Tom Homan, the former acting director of ICE. Gordy kind of mocks Tom Homan's voice by doing an over-the-top impression of him, comparing his voice to that of a professional wrestler. They both found it particularly funny when Homan, in his passionate defense, began referring to himself in the third person. So listen, and let me know what you think.
John and Gordy in the morning. WMDX, the age of stupid. As we continue Idiocracy here on the program.
652, cloudy skies today. Maybe a little bit of sunshine peeking through once in a while, but cooler. High of just 73, right now 61. Okay.
All right, let's finish off the Homan story. This is just fantastic. So, Borders are Tom Homan took some money, $50,000.
Yes,
and to help people get jobs concerning the border.
Mm-hmm. And Laura Ingraham interviewed Tom Homan about all this $50,000 cash that he took.
It's caught on audio tape.
Yeah.
So it happened, and he wasn't initially a person of interest. Another person of interest referred him, saying, hey, you go to this Homan guy.
Check this guy out. Let's listen to Laura Ingraham's take on this with Tom Homan.
All right.
And they said that
You took $50,000 in cash in a bag from an undercover FBI agent to help them win government contracts in Trump's second term. The DOJ said they concluded there was no criminal wrongdoing, but nevertheless, that story is out there, and I imagine you want to respond to that.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I did nothing criminal. I did nothing illegal. And there's hit piece after hit piece after hit piece.
Yeah.
And I'm glad the FBI and DOJ came out and said, and you know, said that nothing illegal happened.
Because
nothing,
you can trust them now.
No criminal activity. You're talking about guys spent 34 years enforcing the law. I mean, I left a very successful business that I ran to come back and work for a government again. I'm back on a government paycheck.
Yeah.
Not only did I sacrifice my my family sacrifices.
Yeah.
I make sacrifices every day. I got more death threats than anybody. I got a security thing around me, but guess what? My kids don't. My wife don't. I mean, I haven't lived with my wife in months because I don't want her
problem.
To be here right now with all the threats. So after all the sacrifices, after serving my nation all these years, they want to come out and dirty me up. And it's not going to end. There's a hit piece on me every 2 weeks. But keep coming, because you know what? Tom Homan isn't going anywhere. Tom Homan isn't shutting up. And Tom Homan's going to keep doing what he's doing, because working with President Trump's the greatest honor of my life.
Okay.
We're making this country safer again every day, and we're going to keep doing it.
I love
Sounds
it.
Like a professional wrestling discussion.
Hit the music. Hit the music. You know, this guy's straight out of, what do you call it, central casting.
Yes.
You know?
I got more death threats than anybody. I got security around me, but guess what? My kids don't. My wife don't. I live with my wife in months, so I don't want her to be here with all the threats. I got to sacrifice. Yeah. Tom Homan isn't going anywhere. Tom Homan is not shutting up. Tom Homan's going to keep doing it. I love it when they go third person. You know, talking about themselves. Yeah.
They called Elliot Ness.
Yeah.
We're making this country safe again.
Oh, my God.
What happened to the 50 grand?
Yeah.
What happened? Is it still in a bag in his closet?
That's right. He took it. He did take it.
Yeah.
And,
did he give it back?
And he has a business that provides jobs for border security. So when he took the $50,000, it was right up his alley. I mean, that's his business, not maybe taking bribes, but maybe it is.
But
maybe taking bribes is something part of his big business there.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a thug, huh? Yeah, that was good.
Well, he was on with Bill Maher, too, and I haven't seen, I got to go back and look at that clip. But he's making the rounds.
Discussing the 50,000?
Well, we'll have to do some digging.
Amazing stuff, really.
Yeah.
All right. I got something here. Let me see. 58. Remember the story about, I don't want to do that yet. How about this? Remember, or not remember, have you read the fact that politicians in Congress are worried about their safety now? They're getting a lot of threats, death threats, because what happened to Charlie Kirk, and now everybody's starting to worry about their own safety, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, wait a minute here. What about our safety? What about the American people's safety?
Yeah.
These guys are worried about their safety and being threatened and all that kind of stuff. We have to worry about being in crowds. We have to worry about being in movie theaters. We have to worry about our kids in school. We have a lot of worries about gun problems in this country, and yet our Congress is taking an interest in maybe protecting themselves after spreading guns nationwide and not doing a damn thing about it. Mm. House Republicans are proposing a $30 million safety fund that they can dip into and, you know, do something for their homes, have security around them, but not the American people. That's the part that really rubs me wrong. Incredibly, Wisconsin Republicans have withheld paying for additional police in Milwaukee for ages, for decades, because they don't like Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So they don't let Milwaukee protect themselves with an expanded police force. And that's why there's crime in Milwaukee. This is all created by Republicans not doing anything about the gun problem and increasing funding for police in all the big cities in the country.
Yeah, that's and it's not changing.
No, it's not changing.
Not anytime soon.
Yeah,
that's it.
Well, you know, it's just irritating. It really is.
Coming up in our next hour, well, gosh, we're just a few minutes away from revealing our next keyword in the Go for the Green and Gold contest.
There's a certain level of excitement in the studio.
Yes, tension is building. And, you know, you could win $200 cash plus gold jewelry
And when we reveal the keyword, we'll get to that in just a few minutes. Also, yeah, that puts you in for the grand prize drawing of indoor club-level tickets to the Green Bay versus Minnesota game coming up in November. That's coming up. And also, we're going to talk to Jim and Sarah, our friends from the Madison Hearing Aid Center. Get an update from them. That's coming up.
I think you should talk to them like a mobster and see what their reaction
is. Jim, Sarah, you got to work with me. Come on.
Let's go.
Come on. Do something for me, huh? I did something for you. Come
I'm
on.
I'm scared now.
Okay.
It is 6:59. News straight ahead.
That's right.
Back with more of John and Gordy in the morning.
The big story's coming up.
WMDX. Yeah.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Michael Wallace, Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani set another record last night, becoming the first pitcher to hit multiple home runs in a playoff game. Three, to be exact.
Oh, my goodness! Shohei Ohtani! Wow! Up and over the roof!
Shohei Ohtani struck out 10 over 6 scoreless and cracked 3 home runs to help the Dodgers knock off the Brewers in Game 4 of their National League Championship Series Friday night 5-1 for a chance to compete for their second straight World Series title.
Pajes going back on the warning track. He makes the catch! Ball game! Series! The Dodgers are going back to the World Series!
The call courtesy of the Dodgers radio network. The Dodgers await the winner of the Toronto-Seattle series. The Mariners lead that best of 7 set 3-2. Erica Herskowitz for CBS News.
It's day 8.